welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. This week, we're focusing on a Microsoft 365 outage and a curious link to the Artemis 2 mission to the moon. We'll also be bringing you back down to Earth with a look at the latest outage figures. I'm Barry Collins, and I'll be hosting today the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. Mike, Microsoft 365 went down on April the 2nd. What did you actually see in the data?
So the first thing to say is it actually wasn't an instantaneous cliff edge. Now, what I mean by that is that there were early indicators sort of appearing around 2040 UTC, but it was like 10 minutes later where it actually really went. And this was like a nearly complete loss of availability sort of globally. And this happened within minutes. So we had this degradation where we saw some tests impacted, and then we sort of saw this big fall at the end there. Now, Microsoft attributed it to a subset of infrastructure in their central US data center, and they said it entered a degraded state. That was broadly consistent with what we saw, though the scope of the impact tells us a more interesting story, which we'll get into. Now, in terms of duration, it lasted for 1 hour and 14 minutes, and restoration was observed around 21:54 UTC. But even after that point, there was some sort of residual elevated response times, and the recovery was gradual rather than the clean cutover, which also gives us some information pertinent to sort of what the outage was.
You said globally, but Microsoft said it was central US. What's the story there?
Well, Microsoft's incident communication described it as largely localized to central US, and they said it was this infrastructure within there that was degraded there. But what we saw was multiple regions all showing the same failure simultaneously. The distinction that matters here is that the broken infrastructure was in the central US, but what it served appeared to be global. And that points to like a shared backend component, so something sitting behind the edge that requests from across the world had to pass through. And this is where that diagnostic layering becomes interesting, because DNS was resolving fine, TCP connections established fine, TLS handshakes were completed fine, and appeared like authentication fine. But the failure was specifically in sort of receiving response back from the back end. So that's a very precise failure signature, and it does tell us a lot about where the problem actually sat.
So how do you actually read that? What does that failure pattern tell you?
So if there was a network problem, you'd expect to see failures earlier in that chain. So elevated latency, packet loss, connection timeouts. Instead, what you get is connections establishing perfectly and then silence. And what I mean silence is you just get sort of the blank screen or you actually can't connect. So the server accepted the connection and never responded. Now, the network layer did show some minor anomalies during this outage window there, but they had no correlation with the outage itself. So that tells us that the network was background noise, but not the cause. And the final piece is that uniformity across the geographies and the providers. So the same failure pattern was showing up simultaneously from locations across the Americas, Europe, and Asia-Pac, and they were all using different carriers. So that's a fingerprint of this shared back-end dependency.
Microsoft said it had restored service, but you flagged something interesting in its response.
So what's interesting is in how Microsoft handled this is that they rerouted the traffic rather than fixing the underlying infrastructure. Now, this might be arguing semantics here, but that's a mitigation, not a resolution. Microsoft's own update sequence confirms this. They tried targeted restarts on the degraded infrastructure once it identified it. And then they said that they'd rerouted around it, or rerouted traffic away from these impacted infrastructure. And it appeared that this rerouting sort of held and the service remained stable. So therefore, the mitigation was effective. But the distinction is worth understanding because it's a pattern that we see repeatedly. So if the fault can't immediately be resolved, then routing traffic away from the impacted infrastructure is actually faster as it gets you to restoration and then provides an opportunity to sort of fix the underlying cause under less time pressure. So when we see this rerouting in an incident update, the story isn't necessarily over. It could just be deferred. And that's actually a broader point about how you read incident communications from any provider there. So restoration and remediation are sort of two different things. And knowing which one you're looking at changes how you think about it and your potential what actions you need to take going forward.
Now, I have to ask, there were reports that this coincided with an Outlook issue on an Artemis 2 astronaut's laptop. Houston, do we have a serious problem here?
So yeah, nice hook, but it's actually a more interesting story here. But first, a bit of background. Outlook on a crew member's personal device is what's known as COTS. So that's a commercial off-the-shelf, and it's there for personal communication, scheduling, and it appeared that this outage impacted those systems. Now, the command and control chain for Artemis 2 doesn't run through the commercial email client laptop. If you think about it, the application characteristics of that particular COTS package doesn't come close to meeting the requirements for anything that needs to be in a critical path. The flight director confirmed this in the post-launch press conference, where they said it was a known configuration issue with offline sync. The ground team reloaded the files and it was sorted. So it was a non-event operationally. The press jumped on it, but there was apparently also a toilet fan issue on day one, and neither of those sits anywhere near a launch hold condition.
So what is the interesting story here?
So the interesting story is what is in that critical path and how you know. So I've been lucky enough to sit inside a few mission controls, so I know the difference between what's COTS and what actually matters there. We once had to call a no-go during a final go, no-go poll. That's that time before you actually go to do the countdown for launch. So the vehicle was fueled, it was on the pad, the launch window was actually counting down. And the reason was there was a fax machine at a location that had run out of paper. Now, I know how that sounds, but the fax was actually part of the formal communication change for that launch, and it was running on X25, which is a packet switch connection orientated that relies on acknowledgements. So when the paper ran out, the receive machine couldn't print or acknowledge. Now, X25 interpreted that as a comms failure, because from the protocol's perspective, that's exactly what it was. And that propagated as a legitimate no-go condition. The fax machine in this case didn't actually fail. It was functioning perfectly. What it couldn't do was complete the service delivery. And because that service delivery chain was properly defined and being validated, the call was actually made to stand down that mission. Now, that's an assurance story. Not detecting that COTS email client has an offline sync issue, but understanding which components sit inside that critical workflows. So continuously validating that they're doing what they're supposed to do end to end and giving you that right signal before you commit something that depends on them.
And you think that maps to something beyond launch operations?
Absolutely. The same discipline matters across any environment where the cost of getting it wrong is sort of high. So deep space comms validations is an extreme example. You can't assume a reachable control plane. Latency and intermittency are structural rather than exceptional. And a delay-tolerant networking approach forces you to be completely explicit about what your service delivery chain actually requires. But that same rigor maps directly onto what agentic AI environments on Earth need right now. So the Microsoft outage in this case is a reasonable illustration of this at a more everyday scale. The edge was fine, the network was fine, but a shared back-end dependency that wasn't being validated as part of that end-to-end service delivery chain quietly failed and then took everything down with them. And that's what I think is the assurance story, and that's where it's more interesting.
What's the takeaway for listeners who run enterprise infrastructure?
So a few things. First, understand the failure signatures. Availability dropping is a symptom. Where in the stack that failure actually sits tells you where the fault domain sits and subsequently what actions you can take. So second is actually scoping the outage. You know, for example, it may be accurate to state that the issue is in a component in a specific location, but that's actually describing where the broken thing is, not the impact itself. So the geography of the failed component, the geography of the impact are two very different things. And it's really important to sort of understand that distinction between them. That's not only going to determine what you do in terms of mitigating it, you need to be able to then say who is actually responsible for that part of that service delivery chain. But also, if we think about that going forward, it's also going to impact sort of the optimizations or the automated remediation steps you want to take going forward. So if something breaks over here, you need to understand the impact it's going to have onto these systems that might be in a completely different part of the world and seem disconnected or not relevant to that part there. And the third thing is the mitigation point that we touched on earlier. So when a provider says they've actually routed around a situation rather than resolved an issue there, you need to understand that restoration and remediation are sort of two different things. And knowing which one you're looking at is going to be the difference to what actions you take next. So is that we actually need to prepare our stakeholders that we may have another disruption, or more importantly, determine the actions you actually take next. This could be that you build a strategy for if this situation happened again, we know that pattern and we can have something automated to mitigate around that particular area if we can. Or ultimately, if this situation happens again, that you can just sit tight for a period of time because it's going to resolve itself within the hour. And all that comes from actually understanding not only what the service provider is telling you as their resolution to that, but also understanding where that sits within your service delivery chain.
Thanks for the deep dive into that outage, Mike. Now let's turn to the overall outage trends and what we've seen in recent weeks.
So looking at the 2 weeks covering March 23rd through to April the 5th, there are actually two fairly distinct stories sort of playing out here, one at a global level and one in the US. So starting with the week of March 23rd to 29th, the global outages rose 17% to 325, reversing what we'd been seeing across the prior couple of weeks. And at the same time, the US outage actually went in the opposite direction, sort of going down 17% to 119. So you had the global heading up and the US heading down simultaneously. Then the following week, March 30th through to April the 5th, the global outages fell 26% to 240. Now that takes you back to levels broadly in line with what we were seeing earlier in the period, which sort of suggests whatever drove that March 23rd, 29 elevation was sort of transient rather than the start of a sustained upward trend. The US outages continued to fall as well, sort of down a further 11% to 106. So across those 2 weeks, the global picture is essentially a spike and a fairly quick correction. And on the US side, what we're seeing is a continued and steady decline.
And this period actually crossed the end of March, which means you've also been able to look at the full month. What do the month-over-month figures tell us?
So March gives us an interesting split depending on whether you're looking at global or US figures, and the two tell quite different stories. So at a global level, the outages increased 13% from February to March, rising from 1,142 to 1,290. That's the most pronounced month-over-month increase we've seen this year, and it stands out because the prior months have been tracking quite evenly relative to each other. Now, in the US, you essentially saw the opposite. Outages went from 600 in February to 598 in March. So that's less than 1%, which is effectively flat. So the global picture moves meaningfully, and the US picture barely moved at all. Now, what's interesting is when you put the global March increase into historical context. So we've seen this pattern before in 2025, 2024, and 2022. Where March similarly saw an increase in global outage activity relative to February. Now, the 1 year where that pattern was reversed was 2023. So this sort of feels like fairly familiar seasonal behavior at the global level rather than something anomalous. Now, the US side had its own historical context too. That marginal decline from February to March aligns with what we saw in 2024, 2023, and 2022. Though it diverges from 2025, when the US outages actually rose over that same period. So the US behavior this March looks consistent with most prior years, just not the most recent one. So it looks like a fairly recognizable seasonal pattern reasserting itself. And the US network, despite that global backdrop, remain notably contained through March. Now, whether that US stability continues into April is something we're going to be watching closely over the next couple of weeks.
And that's our show. Please give us a follow and leave us a review on your favourite podcast platform. We really appreciate it. And not only does this help ensure you're in the know when a new episode is published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on LinkedIn or X at Thousand Eyes, or send questions or feedback to internetreport@thousandeyes.com. Until next time, goodbye.